So we are continuing our journey through the life of Jesus that we started a few months back before Christmas. We started this journey, and it's going to be a long journey because we're not in a hurry. I guess, you know, at some point we're not talking about the stories of Jesus. I don't know what else there is. So we are going to take our time. We went through the Old Testament before that. Now we're working our way through the story of Jesus. There's so many parables and so many miracles and so many teachings and so many interactions that we're just going to take this where it takes us down the road for the very foreseeable future. And today is one of those times because we can't tell everything that happens. Sometimes they're too close to another story to tell again or whatever. We wonder sometimes, do we skip certain things? And we do. But what do we take time to talk about on a Sunday? We always encourage you to read your Bible. And this is one of those little passages that we almost didn't cover, or we almost made it an add-on to a different story. Because it's like, this doesn't need a Sunday. And so, but then we were looking at and I work with, you know, with especially with Anthony Curtis, who was just up here earlier, and I work heavily on these messages together as a team. And when, as we did that, we looked ahead and said, man, the next couple of weeks are what I hope are uplifting messages. Mother's Day, I hope, is a very uplifting passage from the story of Jesus that will speak to us. I hope that's what it will come across as. The Sunday after that, we're having baby dedication. That's got a good message, a good short story for that day. But today, we just decided to tell this passage that we almost didn't. It's only 7 verses long, but it's in the scripture for a reason. And it won't maybe be as, maybe it's uplifting, maybe it's a little bit more challenging, maybe this is going to poke at us a little bit more. But if that's the case, if that's how we feel, then I'd encourage us next couple of weeks, maybe that will feel better. But anyhow, today I just don't want to skip over something, so we decided to go ahead and look at these 7 verses and dive deep and just see where it takes us together. I hope it's worth your time today. It is, because it's in the scripture, but I hope that how we present it is worth your consideration. We just saw the story last Sunday of Jesus calling Matthew to one of his closest disciples. Matthew was a tax collector, and that did not go over with a lot of people. And then Matthew invites Jesus and his disciples to Matthew's house, where they gather together for a big meal with all of Matthew's friends, which included other tax collectors and other disreputable sinners. And Jesus is not supposed to be keeping company with that crowd. And people criticized him, and Jesus answered them so well. And one of the things he said, quoting the Hebrew scriptures, was, God does not care about your religious trappings as much as he cares about how you treat people. So figure that out. And that was a good message for us to address. And by the way, I will say this, if you missed any of those sermons, especially one like that, that's a signature conversation in our church that one of my top 10 favorites probably through the life of Jesus. And go to our website and catch up if you'd like. If you're watching online today, thanks for joining us wherever you are. And you could always find those on Facebook or at our website. But anyhow, today's story is a very short passage that takes place right after last week's story. Right after Jesus had to answer those criticisms and deal with those complaints that he was getting, he gets another question right afterwards, and we're going to look at that together today. Luke chapter 5 and verse 33 says, one day some people said to Jesus, hey, John the Baptist's disciples fast and pray regularly, and so do the disciples of the Pharisees. Why are your disciples always eating and drinking? Now, when I read that list, I'm like, I want to be one of Jesus' disciples, not one of those other groups right there. I prefer the eating and drinking part over the fasting. But anyhow, they had a question. They're like, you know, fasting is a big deal. Now, Jesus did fast, but Jesus didn't apparently encourage those he mentored to fast while he was in his ministry. Jesus talked about the importance of fasting in another place, and in a different place, he talked about the misuse and the overemphasis of fasting. So he's all over the place. And if you want a little homework, and you want to go deeper than I have time to do today in church, go home and read the Old Testament book of Isaiah chapter 58. It's one of those chapters that goes a little bit with what we said last week, where basically people were asking, why doesn't God bless our fasting? And the writing says it's because God would rather you treat people right than do your spiritual disciplines that you think make God happy while you mistreat people. So that's a great passage to go home and look at Isaiah 58 if you want to. And so Jesus is dealing with a lot of this religious trappings. They were mad at him last week for who he was hanging out with, who he was spending time with, who was part of his entourage. And now they're mad at him because they're not doing these spiritual disciplines. And they ask him why. Verse 34, Jesus responded. He says, "Do wedding guests fast while celebrating with the groom?" He says, "Of course not." Like, imagine going to a wedding and you show up and you're like your family of the bride or the groom or friends. And you go into the reception, everyone's excited. And you're like, "Oh, I'm not eating today. Fasting." They're like, "What? This is a celebration. This is a party. This is not the time." No, you wouldn't do that, would you? And he goes on to say this. He says, "Of course not, but someday the groom will be taken away from them and then they will fast." And he's tapping into an analogy that I will not belabor for sake of what else we have to talk about. But he taps into an analogy that Jesus is called in the Christian scriptures to come, the groom, who came and sacrificed for us and offered us salvation, proposed salvation to us at his expense, and that we're invited to believe that, to accept it, to receive him. And as we do, we become part of the greater body of believers, or the church, the collective church, or the bride of Christ. And of course, as he mentions here in this last verse, one day he would leave and go away to prepare a place for his bride, to prepare a place for us, and then one day come and receive us to be with him where he is. And so there's a whole doctrine there that we're not going to get deep into today, but I want to point it out because Jesus uses this to make a point. But here's the point I think he's making. He's saying to the people questioning him, the reason that you fast is because you are fasting to have God show up in a special way, right? Like, so you're fasting and praying to get an answer to prayer. You're fasting and praying for guidance or for strength. You want God to show up in a special way. Or you're fasting and praying nationally for the nation, right? But you want God to show up in a special way. And Jesus was like, "Hello, here I am. God is here. Here I am." And so there's not a need for me to make my disciples fast right now. And so then he pivots, and we're going to pivot as well, because Jesus then decides to keep talking, and he decides to answer a question that they did not directly ask, but they kind of did. In fact, if you read this question that we just answered and the questions that they asked last Sunday's message, you'll see that there's an undercurrent of questioning that Jesus wants to address right now. Because what they really keep asking him when he eats with people and hangs with people and is with people that they don't agree with, when he's, you know, not doing the spiritual practices they think they should do, when they're asking him these things, what they're really asking him is, "Hey, why don't you do your new thing like we do our old thing? Like, we know you came and bring something brand new into the world, and it's all different than we're used to, and I get that, I guess. We're struggling with some of that. But okay, fine. But why don't you do your new thing more like we do our old thing?" You know, because we wouldn't, you know, hang with those folks, and we wouldn't skip that practice. All the things that we just saw the last couple of weeks, we wouldn't do any of that. We do it this way, and you're doing something new, but why don't you do your new thing the way that we do our old thing?" And so this is the undercurrent that he addresses, and he addresses it with two illustrations. Just, what are illustrations? They're things that we take from everyday life that are not necessarily spiritual, but they illustrate something that's spiritual. So he uses two. Verse 36, "Then Jesus gave them this illustration. He says, 'No one tears a piece of cloth from a new garment and uses it to patch an old garment. For then the new garment would be ruined, and the new patch wouldn't even match the old garment.'" Now, I'm not much of a shopper. I'm not much of a, especially for clothing. It's like when I walk into a clothing store, I want to be out in 5 minutes. I already figure out what I want. And I'm with anybody else in my family, I won't name names, who likes to shop a little bit more than I do. I just get weak in the knees, okay? And the energy drains my body. But some of you love shopping. That's wonderful. Here's the deal. I'm pretty sure when your outfits that you love wear out and they get frayed at the edges and faded and maybe they get holes in them, and you don't want to let it go, but it's time. If you go out and buy a new one, man, this is great. I love this new one. You're probably not going to come home and cut holes in it, cut chunks of it out, and say, I'm going to use it to patch up the old one. It's a silly illustration. As soon as Jesus says it, the answer is, who would do something like that? Because all that does is ruin the new garment. That's dumb. And it doesn't even match the old one. It just is nothing. Nothing was better, only ruin. And Jesus is saying, that's what I want you to understand. Now, a couple things about that. I want to go a particular direction with these illustrations, but let me make a sub point here real quick. And that is that what Jesus is ultimately saying is, I'm not just a patch. I am more than a patch. And whether we're a religious people or irreligious people, we have to be careful that we don't treat Jesus that way, because Jesus doesn't want to patch us up. He wants to make us new. And so, you know, whether I'm considering faith in Christ and I'm like, I don't know, maybe I can just, it's not working for me, life's not working. Maybe I can slap a little Jesus, not all of Jesus, because that's too much, just the parts I like, and as a patch onto what I do, maybe that'll be better. And it's not. That's not what he came to do. He came to make us new. And we're religious people are very good at using our religion to justify ourselves and condemn others and to see the world a certain way. And at some point that leaves us empty. We can also step into some Jesus territory and take the parts that we like and ignore those parts that challenge us and say, hey, I'll slap him on here. But he's not a patch job. He's more than that. He comes to make everything new. And so that's a point. But there's a bigger point going on here, because Jesus is talking specifically to religious people who keep saying, you're doing your new thing, but you're not doing it like we do our old thing. Jesus is like, it's a new garment, man. It doesn't belong. Okay, so then he says this. This is a great illustration. Verse 37. He says, and no one puts new wine into old wineskins, for the new wine would burst the wineskins, spilling the wine and ruining the skins. Like, and they didn't have bottles or bottling the way that we do today. They had jugs and containers. But oftentimes wine was put in skins that were wrapped up, and it could hold the wine that would then be poured into it. That new wine would start aging. And as it aged, it would ferment and expand. And of course, that would stretch the wine skins out. And then of course, they would sit for a while. Then once the wine was drunk, those wineskins had become brittle and firm at that point from their previous use. And he said, no one's going to take those old wineskins and put new wine in them, because when that wine ferments and begins to expand and puts pressure, they've already been used. They're going to burst. They're going to make a big old mess. It's going to ruin the skins. It's going to ruin the wine. Once those wineskins were used before, they were new, but now they're old. There was new wine, now it's old. Once they're used, you maybe use them for decoration. Maybe you use them for something else to hold, but not new wine, because that's just not going to work. And it's, again, just like the clothing illustration, it makes sense, doesn't it? New wine can't go in new old wineskins. A mess is going to happen if they happen. So Jesus, instead, verse 38, he says, no, new wine must be stored in new wineskins. It's not just the wine that's new, it's the wineskins that are new. It's not just the work that's just the framework. So anyhow, he's making an application. He's not just talking about clothing and wine. He's talking about spiritual work, his ministry. That's what he's talking about. And he says, I came to do something that's new, and you keep asking me why it doesn't look more like the old. It's a new garment, it's new wine, and it won't work. In other words, Jesus was not bringing an update to the old. Jesus was not bringing an update to what came before. He wasn't patching up what came before. He was bringing something new. Not that he was condemning what came before. What came before was good. He said at one time when he was criticized, all the old, covenant that you think I'm putting down by my new direction, I'm not. I came to fulfill those things that no one else could fulfill. But when I fulfill that covenant or complete that contract, I'm putting a period at the end of it. It is finished. And as Hebrews would later say, it's obsolete. And now it's a new thing. And he's trying to tell the folks who are questioning him, it's all new now. I'm bringing something new. For example, Jesus came to bring a new covenant. There were lots of old covenants, weren't there? If you read the Hebrew history, there were the main covenant they thought about was the covenant God made with the nation of Israel to bring them out of slavery and bring them to the promised land. It was a national covenant. That's the essence of their writings and their scriptures, was their national story. But there were other covenants that we see. For example, there was one with Abraham. There was the one with Israelites as a nation. There was one with David. And there were several others that were less famous. And they all served a purpose, and they were all wonderful for their purpose. But Jesus said, I'm coming to make a new covenant. Before he died, he said to his disciples, this is a new covenant. And it's going to look different than the ones that came before. And it's not a patch job to the ones that came before. It doesn't fit in those wineskins. It's new. Part of that new covenant included new commandments. Jesus gave new commandments. Why would you give new commandments? They had hundreds of commandments already. In their scriptures, they had then, what we call the Old Testament, they had 600 and some commandments, right? And Jesus took all of their commandments one time and condensed them down to two, so that if you can do these two, you're basically doing all of them. But then he turns around and says, I'm giving you new ones. And that kind of talk got him in a lot of trouble, by the way. Who do you think you are giving us a new command? He said, I think I'm God, he said, you know. So he would give new commands, new commissions. And then this new covenant not only had new commands, it also had a new audience. His audience was the entire world. The old covenants were just for a race of people. It was for the Jewish people. And if you wanted to be a part of those covenants, you either had to be born a Jewish person or assimilate into and be brought into that family in order for that covenant to be for you. But Jesus says, I got a new thing, and it's not for any race or group of people. It's for all people, for everywhere, for the entire world, for all times. It's for all of you and me today going forward. So Jesus says, it's new wine. And the problem is that their tendency was to try and wanted to say, if you're going to do something new, then it's going to take off. Let's mix it with our old. They won't mix. The problem with the church today sometimes is we try to mix the new with the old. You know, we do that with what I've said it so many times. We call the Bible. What we call the Bible is, the word Bible means books, right? The books, because it's not a book as much as it's a collection of books. It's actually two collections of books, an old we call the Old Testament, which is Latin for covenant, the Old Covenant. And there's the New Testament or the New Covenant. The Old Covenant is not old to the people who have embraced it, the people who practiced for the thousands of years, including today. That's their religion. That's not old. That's an insult. That's just the Hebrew scriptures. And what we call the New Covenant is kind of the Christian scriptures, right? And we take these two collections of books and put them together and call it one thing, as if it's all equally weighted and equally applicable. And it's just not. And we all know that, but we sometimes don't admit that. And it makes us hypocrites, and it makes us pick and choose sometimes. And Jesus is like, look, the old served a purpose. It is honorable, and it should be recognized, and we do that. But this is new. This is new. And this is what brings people to the cross. This is what brings people to salvation. This is what you need. And this is where we're going. And when you mix things that should not be mixed, it bursts and it makes a mess, doesn't it? It bursts and it makes a mess. And we've seen a lot of messes come from Christians mixing what things that shouldn't be mixed in our messaging. We can go on about that for an hour. But I have another thing to go on about for an hour. Not really. So let me move on. So after addressing all of that, Jesus then makes one more verse, and we're going to spend the rest of our time here today. He makes one more statement. He just got done saying, look, you're wondering why I don't do my new thing the way you do your old thing, but you don't put a new garment and cut it in pieces to patch an old one. It's a new thing. They don't match. You don't take my new wine and put it in old wineskins because it won't work. They're going to make a mess. New wine, new wineskins, okay? New work, new framework, new everything. He's made this point, and we've made the point just now. And we can go a lot deeper than we did, but I won't for sake of time. So instead, I want to see what he says next to them. He says, here's the hang-up. Here's the hang-up. This is so real. It's so real. Verse 39. He says, but no one who drinks the old wine seems to want the new wine. The old is just fine, they say. He says, here's the problem. I'm bringing something new, but a bunch of you are like, well, why would I want something new? It's the old is working just fine for me. Isn't that what he was running into over and over again? You know who resisted Jesus the most? The most religious people of his day, the Bible reading, scripture memorizing people of his day resisted him the most because they're like, we like our framework. The old is just fine. It's just fine. It was fine for them. It wasn't fine for everybody. There was a whole lot of people left on the marginalized parts of their culture that they were fine leaving out. But as long as they felt comfortable in their structure, it works for me. It's fine. It's better. Why would we want you to come and bring something new? Why would we want new wine, Jesus? I like what we have just fine. And before we bash, look, I know when we read the story of Jesus, we make the Pharisees and the religious leaders the villains, right? They're the villains of the story. And I get that. But let's just be real. They're us, man. They are me and they are you. They are us because they are human. That's human nature right there, isn't it? So let me go ahead and take way too much time to step away from the story and do what Jesus did and use an analogy. Because we all like the things the way we like them. And it's so easy that the older we get, and it doesn't matter what your personality is. You know, your personality might be adventurous, and you could get old and you're still like to open to new ideas no matter how old you get. There are others who, at a very young age, we're like, no change. Everything's just fine the way it is. Please, thank you very much. But no matter where we are, it's human nature as we go to start looking back and saying, this new stuff is not as good as the old. It ain't like it used to be. Kids these days. Tell you what, as if they weren't saying that every generation forever. The way things are, you know, the problem with, you know, it's not the same. You know, we like our old TV shows. I'll watch those 100 times, but don't give me something. It's not the same anymore. We like our sports aren't like they used to be. They ruined it all, you know. And we just get that way because we get comfortable with what we like, and then new things, we just are like, eh. And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong. I'm just pointing out human nature. I'm that way, you're that way to some extent. Even if we're more adventurous like I am, we're all like that on some level. We start sounding that way as time goes on. So let me use one illustration. I could pick on 1,000, but here's one. Let's pick on music. Not Christian music. Good music. Don't get mad at me when I say that, by the way, okay? I'm just making a joke, sort of. But anyhow, no, here's the thing. Music. So I love music. I was a child of the late 80s and the 1990 decade turn. That was my era. It was really good, by the way. That was the best. See, the old's just fine, isn't it? See, so anyhow, but I have my little space. Now, this is just an illustration to relate to you. There are people who are older than me who I used to hear when I was growing up, oh, it ain't as good as it was back in the music. It was much better than back in the 60s. That was their strong opinion, which how helpful is that to somebody who's enjoying Journey and all the good stuff, you know? But anyhow, okay. But here's the problem. When they said, oh, it was better in the 60s, do you know what they meant? They were comparing the greatest hits of the 60s. I got news for you. There were thousands of songs in the 60s, and most of them were forgettable. But some of them, 20, 30 years later, were still awesome, weren't they? They were the greatest hits. And depending on how much you like music, that could be a bigger list or a shorter list, but it was still just a percentage of all the music that was back then that was largely forgotten. And it's really kind of unfair to compare the greatest hits of one era to the new music, all the music of another era, and say, your all music isn't as good as my greatest hits era. Well, of course it's not. He said, well, it doesn't like sound like Ben E. King singing Stand By Me. By the way, isn't Benny King, Stand By Me, one of the best songs? That's an awesome song. But not everything he sang was great. Not every song back then was great. So again, comparing the greatest hits is a disingenuous. It's fine to like something older. It's not fine to be disingenuous in how we measure things. Most of the problems we get to in every arena of our lives is we measure things based upon our biases with false comparisons, don't we? Because we like what we like. That's fine. That's human. And it happens to me too, because then I'm raising kids in the 2010s and up to now, and you know, their music is just not as good as it was in the late 80s. It's just not. I'm sorry. I mean, come on now. Steve Perry starts singing, or I start hearing, I'm going to offend some saints here, but I mean, you can't top Def Leppard and Bon Jovi and all the good music of my day, right? Bryan Adams. But, you know, I mean, who's Harry Styles? That's just not the same anymore, you know? Yeah, I got Wilson Phillips, you have Sabrina Carpenter, but come on now. It was just better. But you know what I'm doing? I'm doing the same thing that the generation before me did. I'm comparing the greatest hits. There's a lot of songs in the 80s, thousands of them. Most were forgettable. But some have endured. And I play those on my little playlist on Apple Music. And so it's easy to compare through a false metric to say, why would I want something new? So when my kids were growing up, here's what we did in our house. I'm so off the subject, but I'm going here for a reason. So please take the ride with me here. When we would go on a trip or go anywhere of any substantial distance besides the store, we were all in the car as a family when my kids grew up. I'm like, hey, let's take turns picking the song we listen to. And what that did for us was it gave me a chance to kind of get some exposure to some music that I would not otherwise listen to and kind of help me be a little bit more in tune. And it also gave me a chance to kind of, Michelle and I could share some things with them that we wanted them to know that they wouldn't have otherwise known, you know? And so it was a big learning experience. Now they're all mostly grown and I listen to podcasts and audible books now, so I'm old. But anyhow, my point is that kind of kept things fresh, right? And it kept us connected, and I like that. Because otherwise, I'm going to be sitting there saying, "Arr!" Now, that's just human nature. Now, let's talk about Christian music for a minute, since I mentioned that earlier. We do the same thing. But the difference is when we get to spiritual things is we spiritualize those preferences. Now, it's not just my preference, it's my conviction. So, you know, we can argue about Christian music. You know, whatever era, you know, we like of music. For example, you know, the old hymns are better. No, they're not. Neither is the stuff now. The old hymns are great, but you know what we all like? The greatest hits. The greatest hits of the hymns. Can I tell you how I know that? Because I grew up with a hymnal in church. You know, we don't have that anymore. This is not our issue, but let me just be honest. We had, like, every hymnal I've ever had in my life in church had, like, 500 songs in it. Do you know how many of those 500 songs we sang? 50, if we were generous. We didn't even know half of them. And that's just our hymnal. You go on vacation to five other people's churches, and you're like, what hymnal is this? Terrible songs are these. I don't know these. They're terrible. What I like is just fine. But the greatest hits that endure, and we say get sentimental to them, which is fine. And sometimes we're like, it's just not the same as it used to be. We mean all the music of today doesn't compare to the greatest hits of yesterday? Of course it doesn't. And some of us Christian music lovers, we're like stuck at 20 years ago in Christian music, you know? I know better than arguing for Bryan Adams over Frankie Valli in the past and over Harry Styles in the future when I'm in the present arguing against, you know, Fanny Crosby of the past, arguing for Chris Tomlin of the present and hating on Forrest Frank of the future. Pick on somebody. My point is that there's a variety. And there's nothing wrong with preference. There's nothing wrong with preferring something over another. And we all get that. But we know Christians, don't we? We know people, not even Christians, who their preferences are arrogant. And we know Christians who their preferences aren't preferences, they're convictions. Because if I can put a spiritual first behind what I like being better, then I can justify being stubborn and I can justify being resistant. And that's just human nature. So all of that long analogy, which took way too much time, is to say, I'm not going to bash these people that are pushing back at Jesus because I am them and they are me if I'm not careful. They're looking at Jesus saying, we got a whole system of how we do God. We had a whole system of how we do worship. We read the scriptures. We memorize the scriptures. We follow the scriptures. And you're coming along doing this stuff that does not look like we think it should look. And so why don't you conform it to look more like us? And Jesus is like, it's new and it needs new containers. But you don't want that because to you, the old is just fine. And the crowd that resisted Jesus the most was the religious crowd who were comfortable where they were. Everyone outside is like, we want something new. But the others did not. Here's my point. We've got to be careful. There's nothing wrong. And Jesus was saying to them 2,000 years ago, look, guys, you keep questioning me, but it's new. There's nothing wrong with the things that we used to have. They serve their purpose, he said. But we have to be ready for when God decides to do something new. And that's true today. Jesus does not want us to miss out on what he is doing because we can't move on from what he has done. And that was so good, I'm going to say it again. Jesus doesn't want us to miss out on what he is doing because we don't have to move past what he's done. Here's the point. This is not a negative. This is a positive message. I lose when I can't get excited about what God is doing. You know, back to our music analogy again, if I get resistant in this to the music of the 80s because I was born in the 60s, I'm going to miss out on Bryan Adams. And that would be a sin right there. If I get that way about music, if I get that way about music today, I'm going to miss out on some good stuff, right? If I get that way about my Christian music, I'm going to miss some good stuff. I was talking to some of the young people not long ago, younger than me. Everyone's young compared to me. It's all white here. My face is outdated, is older than my age. But anyhow, I was telling some people today, y'all like, who do you like? And, you know, people are talking about new artists like Forrest Frank, a Christian artist. And I heard about him 2 weeks ago. I'm trying to catch up. It's different. I like it because it challenges me from the box I'm in. But there's nothing wrong with liking what we like. But sometimes we miss good stuff. And Jesus was telling the people of his day, you're going to miss some good stuff, man. Don't miss the good stuff. Don't miss the sports today because you're stuck in how they used to play football. There's some great games going on, man. So I'm just saying, embrace the new. That's what Jesus was saying to them. He was saying, embrace the new that Jesus came to do. Because if we don't embrace it, we're going to miss something. And every time we get settled and stubborn, we miss something that Jesus is up to. And he said to his audience, guys, you're going to miss all of the good. I came to save the world. Embrace the new that I came to do. They're like, no, we don't like it. And they missed out. You know how much they didn't like it? They resisted him to the point that they killed him. But that was part of God's plan. And they still missed out. Because here's why. Just because it was new doesn't mean it was different. New wine is still wine. Think about that. New wineskins are still wineskins. May taste a little different, may look a little different, but it's the same thing. God doesn't change. He's the same, but his covenant changed. That's what he was saying to them. I didn't change. God didn't change. What he did in your sacred Hebrew scriptures was real. That was God. And what God's doing now is God. It's still God. Just a new covenant. And it looks different, has a different container, but it's still God. And so that's a macro truth about the gospel, the new that Jesus came to do. But it's also true, not just what Jesus did, but what he is doing now. So let me just tie this back to you and me today. What do I want you and me to go home with today on this odd message, perhaps? First of all, let's be excited that Jesus came to do something new. Because I look back at the old covenant, and I sure wouldn't want to live that way. But it wasn't for us anyhow. It wasn't our story. But I sure want to embrace the good news of Jesus Christ, and let's celebrate that on a macro level. On a micro level, I want to give you something to take home as well. On a micro level, embrace the new that Jesus came to do. Or if I can say it this way, embrace the new that God is up to. You say, well, new, is there a new Jesus or a new gospel? Nope, same old gospel, same Jesus, same thing. The mission never changes. Methods do, right? Times change. Nothing wrong with that. Technology changes. Opportunities change. Challenges change. Things change. And if we're not careful, we won't embrace the new that God is up to because we confuse the mission with the method. Someone once said, marry the mission, but date the model. I love that statement, except for people getting mad at me when they tell their significant other, Arlen said to date a model, so I don't want to get confusing here. But marry the mission, date the model. What is true is Jesus never changes, but a lot of things about how he works sometimes is new, and we want to embrace the new that God is up to, and that can be hard. We like our sentiment. And again, I've said this already, when it's religious, we shift from labeling our sentiment as preference to when it's spiritual stuff, we call it convictions, and we spiritualize our reasons to be stubborn and to be resistant. But as I also said already, new wine is still wine. New wineskins are still wineskins. May taste a little different, may look a little different. It's still the same thing. We've got to stop treating things that are as if they're different and therefore less than because they're new to us. If they're true to the message of Jesus, then it doesn't matter how new it comes across. And we get that. I think Lighthouse is good at this. But I want, whether you're in the room and this is a new thought for you, whether you're watching online and it's a new thought, let's not be the people who dig in our heels at all the wrong spots because we will miss out on something that's awesome. We will miss out on something beautiful that God is up to, like the religious people did in Jesus' day who said, nope, the old is just fine. And I don't want to miss out on anything. I was raised in a very traditional, particular kind of church in a thousand ways. So many different metrics that we don't even think about now that I was raised in as if it was normal. About a dozen years, I pastored that way because that's what I knew. About a dozen years ago, we led a massive change and upheaval a lot, and it was hard. And some people didn't want to come along for the ride because the old was just fine. And so it was a very costly shift, but we made it. And I remember afterwards talking to a team of men and women who were meeting. We had a big meal together at someone's house. We were talking about that transition and how hard that was because of the resistors. And I said, before we become critical of anybody else, I said, watch out. We are only 10 or 20 years away from being the same person. We are 10 or 20 years away from being what was new is now old, and we hate anything different. And that could be true for everything. If you talk about church, what once was argued about as a contemporary versus a traditional church is over. Honestly, contemporary church is traditional. It's everywhere. But what if God tried something new? Would we know how to pivot? And I said, we can't get stuck 20 years from now from being the same kind of people that frustrated us because we're like, it's fine the way I like it. What if God is up to something new? Can we embrace the new that God is up to? Or are we going to become the problem that we once despised? Because in the end, effectiveness is more important than sentiment. What needs to be done is more important than how I want to do it. What's more important needs to be done is more important than how we've been doing it. Effectiveness is more important than sentiment. And that means, will I embrace the new that God is up to? Now you're like, okay, Arlen, you said that's a macro idea. So that's a micro idea within a macro thought. The macro thought, Jesus brought something new. Micro, how do we embrace the new? Here's my application. You're like, Arlen, do I have to invent something new? Because I'm not that kind of a creative person. Like, am I supposed to figure out some new way of anything or help our church by something? No. Not at all. That's not my point at all. I'm not challenging us to reinvent any wheels right now. That's not the point. If anyone's got to keep their pulse on the church side of things and how where we get stuck, it's me and other leadership because that's kind of the center of what we do. But even then, I'm not so sure I'm up to it. I have done some major leading twice in the past. I led our church through a lot of transition. I led the church that used to be here through a lot of transition, and it's revitalized us all. It's been great. But here's the deal. The problem is, I might be an old wineskin now. Don't laugh when I say that. Some of you aren't so young either, okay? Look in the mirror. It's not just me. But here's the thing. I might be the guy that God's going to do something new another way. Or maybe he just raises me up again. I don't know. But what I want to say to me and to you is this. Not that we have to invent anything, but here's what I'm saying. When we see God doing new things, in the name of the gospel, in the name of Jesus Christ, when we see him doing new things near us or far away from us, thanks to social media, we can have opinions about everybody in the world, right? When we see things around us that are different, that are new for the work of God, let's not resist. Let's not cross our arms. Let's not fight. Let's not criticize. What I can do, what you can do with me, is we can encourage. We can roll up our sleeves and say, can we help? And maybe we can just embrace the new that God is up to. Otherwise, we might miss out on something. And I never want to miss out. I don't want to miss out on a relationship. And I don't want to miss out on an opportunity because I'm like, it's just fine the way I like it. And I'm very prone as a human to getting there, aren't you? So let's embrace the new that Jesus came to do, macro, micro, even today, the new that God is up to. Let's embrace the new. Let's not be resistors. I'll close with this. I got to close. Illustration. In the business world, if you read some good books on companies and stuff, they talk about new ideas or new technologies being developed. And there's a whole pattern where they talk about what it takes to get past the growth curve of a new idea. And there's this whole metric where there's early adapters, and then there's this whole thing where more people got on board finally, and you get past a certain hump of acceptance to this new technology or idea, and then it becomes mainstream. And then at some point, once it's mainstream, there's still what they call the laggards. There's the early adapters who are risking it all, and it might not work, and then it works, and then there's the laggards that will still, the laggards are the ones who say, the early adapters are the ones who use the first smartphones before anyone else was using them. The laggards are the ones who still say, it's the devil, it's the mark of the beast or something. I don't know. I don't hate that kind of stuff. I use carrier pigeons still. I mean, there's always a path of adoption. Here's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter how we treat technology, because technology is not that important. It's important. But when it comes to the message of Jesus and the work of Jesus, I don't want to be a laggard. I want to be, if anything, an early adopter. But if not, I just don't want to be a laggard. I want to say, God, if you're doing something and it's a little different than I like, I'm going to embrace the new that God is up to. Because that's exactly what he's been doing for 2,000 years since he brought a new covenant into the world and changed everything. He keeps on working in new ways. And I love all of it. Let's be those people.